You're listening to Consider This, episode 235, for November 19th, 2018.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever, wherever, and whoever you are, I'm thankful to you for stopping by to hear me. This is Consider This, and I'm Doug Payton, here to give you my conservative commentary and your feedback in 10 minutes or less. Stop by the website, considerthis.ctpodcasting.com, to get show notes, a transcript, and find out how to get in touch with me. That's CT as in cold turkey. A teacher pays the price for following his conscience. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act turns 25. And a Thanksgiving message from me to you. Let's get right to it. 2.5 years ago, I interviewed Eric Erickson about his book, You Will Be Made to Care, in which he documented people of conscience, Christians in particular, would be required by the government, spurred on by left-wing social groups, to choose between conscience or compliance. One of the situations he highlighted was that of Kelvin Cochran, the Atlanta fire chief who was fired for writing a book about his Christian beliefs that deviated from the liberal orthodoxy on gender. Mr. Cochran's story ended recently when he settled with the city for damages. Will the same be said sometime in the future for Richard Mast? No, he's not got the public profile of Kelvin Cochran, but he too is having to make a choice. Mr. Mast is a PE teacher at Chasco Middle School in Port Richey, Florida. The school had allowed a girl who said she was a transgendered boy to use the boys' locker room to change. The first time that happened, she caught the boys with their pants down, literally, causing a lot of embarrassment. Say what you want about middle school boys, they can indeed get embarrassed in this situation. So what did the school do when they got a complaint from a law firm about this? Well, they did what any public school that was concerned about the children under their protection would do. They issued a gag order. See, they hadn't informed the parents about the locker room policy change, and they wanted to keep teachers from talking about it. Then they asked Richard Mast to supervise this potentially undressed girl in the locker room. He refused to put himself in the position of possibly seeing an undressed minor, who, in spite of calling herself a boy, was a girl in every other respect. In a normal situation, this would be a good thing, an honorable thing, especially in this age of public school teachers sexually molesting their students. But we're way beyond normal situations in this country. In this case, the school decided he would be transferred to another school for discipline for, quote, not doing your job in the locker room, close quote. Who can blame this guy? Well, enough people, apparently, to get him transferred, but think about it. How soon before this middle schooler had a Me Too moment through no fault of the teacher? The social justice warriors have lost all reason, and this guy is paying the price. And what's worse is that the school is conspiring to keep the parents in the dark. Well, not anymore, I guess, but for an institution that keeps saying they want more parental involvement, they have a funny way of encouraging it. I guess if you enrage parents enough, they'll get more involved. Not the way it should be done, though. And this is Reason to Homeschool number 17,856.
This is Eric Erickson. You're listening to the 10-minute or less conservative podcast, Consider This.
In 1993, Bill Clinton signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, sometimes referred to as RFRA, which gave more protection to a First Amendment right against bills that might interfere with it. Now, 25 years later, 172 House Democrats are supporting Bill H.R. 3222, which carves out exemptions to religious freedom, an actual constitutional right, where it interferes with the LGBTQ-LMNOP agenda, or a host of other issues that the left holds dear. And it's called, ironically, the Do No Harm Act. And by harm, it means things like disagreement and voicing a contrary opinion. If you say something that is in line with 2,000 years of Christian thought on homosexuality, they call it hate, and violence, which is, therefore, harm. The left has been very busy redefining words to fit their policies, so there's no question that if this were to pass, it would be used in such a way as to completely gut not just RFRA, but the First Amendment itself. Fortunately, with Republican control of the Senate and the White House, this has as much chance of passing as a snowball in California right now. Still, it does drop the mask a bit. Since we're coming up on Thanksgiving in America, I just wanted to spend some time here talking about giving thanks. The phrase we have been taught since childhood is, thank you. Our parents would remind us when we'd forget. What do you say? Thank you, we'd reply. Somewhat embarrassed, we had to be reminded. But you know what you never hear anyone say, whether prompted to or not? Thank. The word thank is not a sentence. It makes absolutely no sense. Because when you thank someone. You thank a person who did something for you. You don't stand up and thank the chair you were sitting on, though you might thank the person who made the chair for making such a good one. You wouldn't thank your dinner for being delicious, but you would thank the cook for preparing it so well. Thank must always be followed by who you are thanking, not what. Thank you. You must give thanks, and simply being thankful to no one in particular similarly misses the mark. Now, chairs and a meal are tangible things, and we know who to thank for them, but what about the intangibles, like our intellect, or things like the tree in our front yard? It's not so obvious there. We ourselves may have fed our intellect, but we didn't create it. We may have enjoyed the shade of the tree, but we don't thank it. That makes about as much sense as getting angry with the tree for dropping those leaves we have to rake up. Simply being thankful for either is basically impotent. The verb to thank requires a direct object, and that must be someone who had the intention of benefiting you, not a tree or a chair. Or the universe. I've seen and heard some people who don't believe there's a God thank the universe for good things they have. To them, it seems like thanking inanimate matter makes more sense than thanking the person who created that matter. Now, I can't see him, and I take it on faith that he exists, but it makes more sense to thank the cook rather than to thank the green bean casserole, even if I can't see the cook. Now, this is no proof that God exists. I'm not suggesting that it is, but what I am suggesting is that I think it's worth asking to whom you are thankful for those intangibles or those trees. If they are here by chance, there's no thanks to be given, and any expression of thanks to no one in particular is nonsense. Instead, the first Thanksgiving Day celebrated by the pilgrims was a day to thank God for those intangibles and trees. It was Abraham Lincoln who formalized a practice that had been common in the country already, declaring during the height of the Civil War a day of thanksgiving to God, to, quote, commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife, and to heal the wounds of the nation. Close quote. And so as we celebrate Thanksgiving, or find ourselves thankful any time of the year, remember to thank those responsible for the blessing, or the gift, or the benefit you receive. And if you come up short in deciding who to thank, it might be worth it to consider this.